This is Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. In the next half hour, we're going to take a look at Argentina and the memories of the Dirty War. We'll hear from the author of a new book, Lexicon of Terror, Argentina and the Legacies of Torture, which examines how language was used by the Argentine military to cover up some of its most heinous crimes. We'll also have a profile of a woman who's been at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and justice in Argentina, both during and after the dictatorship. Hebe de Bonafini is the founder and president of Las Madres de la Plaza de Mayo. She'll tell us why they continue fighting to get to the bottom of the dirty war crimes. Coming up next on Our Americas. March 24th marked the 22nd anniversary of what has been called the Gentleman's Coup in Argentina, bringing to power one of the hemisphere's most brutal military dictatorships. From 1976 to 1983, when Argentina embarked on the slow and difficult transition to democracy, over 30,000 people were tortured, killed, or disappeared in a neo-fascist campaign designed to clean up society of its so-called subversive elements. To mark the anniversary, Argentine students, labor, and political activists marched in the streets, demanding justice for the victims of the dirty war years and urging their fellow citizens never to forget what happened during that period. During the anniversary commemoration, Argentine human rights campaigners said that Congress's vote repealing amnesty laws for crimes of the military dictatorship was not enough, and that dirty war criminals must be jailed. As the leader of the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo said, "We've been fighting for more than 20 years, and we're not about to give up now." The lower house of Congress in Argentina voted last month to repeal the full stop and the due obedience laws of 1986 and 1987, which basically freed 1,100 military men, police officers, and civilians convicted or charged of kidnapping, torture, and murder. The vote, however, was largely symbolic because the annulment did not apply retroactively. This is what has angered many Argentines over the years, especially the women of the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. Its founder and leader, Hebe de Bonafini, was recently in New York. Our America's Laura Tarantini caught up with her and prepared this profile on Hebe de Bonafini.
Yo soy una mujer que nací en un barrio y trabajé toda la vida y me casé y tuve hijos.
I am a woman who was born in a barrio. I worked at my life and I married, I had children. I had a small family project of work, of struggle, and then the dictatorship came. First, they kidnapped my oldest son, later my second oldest. After that, then my daughter-in-law. They devastated my family. We were badly persecuted. Now I'm 69 years old. I was left a widow, almost without a family. They left me two of my children.
Viuda, sin familia casi. Tengo dos hijos. Me quedaron dos hijos, una hija de 32 años.
April 30th, 1977, dozens of bereft, angry mothers and grandmothers gathered in La Plaza de Mayo in front of the Casa Rosada, the presidential palace. The women were there to protest the disappearances of sons, daughters, and other family members, the victims of Argentina's military junta, and to seek solace in each other's company. These women were to fashion their anger, shock, and isolation into what today has become one of Latin America's most visible organizations demanding justice and fighting for human rights.
De las Madres de la Plaza de Mayo es una organización que comenzó siendo una organización de derechos
las
humanos.
Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo is an organization that began as a human rights organization and which today has become a political, nonpartisan organization that participates in and shares in all social struggles, in all calls for justice in my country.
Reclamo de justicia en mi país.
Hebe de Bonafini is the president of Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo. Since the organization's founding, she has been at the forefront of the struggle to uncover the extent of the crimes committed during the Dirty War and to bring those responsible for the torture, disappearances, and murders to justice.
Hago esta diferenciación de la organización porque en mi país las organizaciones de derechos humanos.
I give this definition of our organization because in my country, human rights organizations are prostituting themselves by working for economic reparations. And we seek justice, the justice of prison. We don't accept any type of economic reparation. We won't allow them to put a price on the lives of our children.
No permitimos que le pongan precio a la vida de nuestros hijos.
This is the basis for Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo's 21-year struggle. The Thursday demonstrations of these white-kerchiefed women have become such a fixture of the daily life of Buenos Aires that photos of their weekly vigil in the Plaza de Mayo can be found in travel guidebooks to Argentina's capital city. They became, and continue to be, a symbol of resistance to the brutal anonymity of the dirty war tactics, which many have forgotten over the last 10 years during the gradual transition to democracy.
In the last decade, every nation in the Americas but one has embraced democracy, giving its people a vibrant free press, free elections, and the rule of law. Decades of coups and bloody civil wars have given way to the peaceful transition of power.
But Everde Bonafini says, despite the semblance of democracy in Argentina, President Clinton's words ring hollow to the victims who still live with the tragedies of the past.
El concepto de democracia del presidente Clinton, bueno, la verdad que no lo comparto porque para
President Clinton's concept of democracy, well, the truth is that I don't share it because for him, democracy is to live like he lives. And for our people, democracy is to have work, liberty, and justice. If these three things don't exist, there is no democracy. That is to say, in our countries, there is no democracy.
No hay democracia.
As an example of this, De Bonafini points to the way Las Madres have been treated, both at their beginning and later under democracy.
Por esta historia de la democracia tan comentada y tan hablada,
Las Madres. This democratic history, so commented on and so talked about, we Las Madres had two moments of isolation. The first was when we marched for the first time, April 30th, 1977, there in front of the dictatorship, and afterwards, when the so-called democratic government of Dr. Alfonsín came. No one wanted Las Madres to continue in the plaza. All of Argentina ostracized us, saying, we no longer need Las Madres. With democracy, one can eat, one can live, one can study. Enough already with Las Madres.
Repudiaba, decía, no, ya Las Madres no hacen falta. Con la democracia se come, se vive, se educa, ya basta de Madres.
Las Madres' stance became more vigorous after the dictatorship ended in 1983. They were especially angered over witnessing how Argentine justice was served to the criminals of the military junta.
Porque los dos gobiernos, primero el de Alfonsín y después el de Menem,
both governments, first that of Alfonsín and then that of Menem, between the two of them pardoned the murderers, the more than 4,000 known and denounced murderers who made possible the disappearances of 30,000 young men and women, the gunning down of 10,000 in the streets, the taking of thousands of political prisoners, and the exile of 1.5 million people.
Y 1.5 million de personas en el exilio.
It is not easy to forget the beginning of the seven-year nightmare. The government of Isabella Perón was toppled in 1976 by a military junta that believed that Argentine society needed to be purged of its radical toxins or cleaned up, the euphemism for the work of what came to be known as the Dirty War. They were obsessively anti-communist. The junta said that multi-party democracy had unleashed a new generation of radicalized students, intellectuals, and rank-and-file union activists uncowed by the Peronist trade union bureaucracy. They feared another popular front, like in Spain's Civil War, or another Cuban Revolution. After the coup, they banned political parties, shut down the press, and arrested union leaders. Thousands of professors thought to have leftist sympathies were purged from Buenos Aires University, and the murderous rooting out of the opposition began. The emergence of an urban guerrilla movement in the early 70s, the Montoneros, gave the military an excuse to step up the disappearances and assassinations that had begun to take the sons and daughters of Las Madres. Everde Bonafini's children were among them.
Cuando vino la dictadura, secuestró primero a mi hijo.
And when the dictatorship came, first they kidnapped my eldest son, later my second oldest, after that my daughter-in-law. They devastated my family. We were badly persecuted. Now I am 69 years old, left a widow, almost without a family. They left me two of my children.
Viuda, sin familia casi. Tengo dos hijos. Me quedaron dos hijos. Uno.
For South America, the scale of the carnage was unimaginable. By the end of their seven-year regime, the military junta had outmurdered all of the dictatorships on the continent. When democratic elections were finally allowed in 1983, Dr. Raúl Alfonsín of the Radical Ticket won overwhelmingly on a platform of justice and democracy. Within 3 days of his taking office, the top junta members were arrested and military trials for war atrocities were begun. But increasing unrest in the military forced Alfonsín to abandon his balancing act between fulfilling his campaign promises of justice and avoiding alienating a still powerful and self-righteous military. In 1986, the full stop law put a 60-day time limit on trying military officers in civil courts. The following year, the due obedience law was enacted to pardon middle and lower-ranking officers whose guilt lay in following orders. Ebe de Bonafini says that these laws and other attempts to pardon the war criminals angered many people in Argentina.
El tema del perdón de los asesinos ha ocasionado una gran desmovilización. La gente se...
The issue of pardoning the assassins created a massive demobilization. The people felt betrayed, crushed, and they were saying, what can we do with so many murderers free among us? En las madres, with our actions and our work and our strength, we show the youth that there are other paths, that one can condemn the murderers in many ways, that the people have the right to make themselves heard in the face of unjust laws.
Tenemos derecho a rebelarnos ante las leyes injustas.
Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo and other human rights groups had been pressuring Alfonsín for a congressional commission to investigate the whereabouts of the disappeared. Instead, they were given 6 months to report their missing family to CONADEP, the National Committee on the Disappeared, whose mission was merely to receive such information. This was not the justice they had expected. Things got worse with the new president. Carlos Saúl Menem, the Peronista candidate, won the 1989 elections amidst spiraling inflation, food riots, and restlessness in the military. In a sweeping gesture of appeasement, Menem pardoned all the top junta members, outraging the population once more. Now their sons and daughters' murderers had become their neighbors. How to address the crimes of the dictatorship is the issue that continues to divide Argentine society. There are those that insist that the way to stitch the lacerations of Argentina's past are to forget, pardon, and move on. Others say, shining a light on the past, disclosing the crimes, and jailing the guilty is the only way forward. In the international press, this struggle for justice has been overshadowed by much-touted economic reforms, which have promised healing through prosperity and a raised standard of living for all Argentines. From the U.S. point of view, strong economic development, the opening of markets, and investment opportunities are synonymous with securing human rights.
Stifling command economies have been replaced by free markets, giving innovation and more jobs and higher income. We must work harder together to alleviate poverty, lift the conditions of working people throughout the hemisphere, and give everyone a chance to be a winner in the new economy.
Last October, President Clinton took a 3-day tour of Argentina, praising the country's gains under 8 years of President Carlos Saúl Menem's leadership. Clinton stressed that under Menem's guidance, the country has left behind its history of dictatorship and extravagant economic policy. Menem's neoliberal economic program has made Argentina a jackpot for the players of international finance. It has included massive privatization, accompanied by austerity measures and social spending. About $30 billion worth of energy, telecom, and transport assets were sold off between 1989 and 1997. The immediate consequence has been record unemployment, hitting 17.2% in 1997. Menem's cutbacks in education, health care, and social services have also accelerated the growing immiseration and unrest. Ebe de Bonafini of Las Madres says the consequences of these policies for the people of this emerging market have been devastating.
Por hambre, por desocupación, por balas, por enfermedades de la miseria, sida, tuberculosis.
So many have been killed by hunger, by unemployment, by bullets, by the diseases of poverty, AIDS, tuberculosis, cholera, diseases that had been eradicated and that have reemerged. And while all of them have been allowed to spread, they're suffocating savage capitalism that leaves less and less space for protest, for demanding a dignified life. Because the workers in my country, all they ask for is jobs, and the truth is they're like slaves. I have heard as well that here in the U.S., they say people work in sweatshops, and that's horrible, isn't it? They continue being enslaved in any case, because what they earn is also a pittance. This happens in my country too. So when the people are crushed, enslaved, and when they are kept like animals and not taken into account, in my country, people have been expelled from the system. They don't have enough to live. They don't have enough to eat. They can't count on an education. Children go to school to eat because they're given a little bread or milk. They don't go to study. Teachers say that the students attend, but they can't even read because they don't eat. So once again, there is growing illiteracy. There are diseases because there are no decent hospitals to cure them, because people's health is not protected.
Entonces hay mucho analfabetismo otra vez, hay enfermedades porque no hay hospitales buenos para curarse, porque la salud no está protegida.
Recent election results have shown the profound discontent with Menem's policies and his Partido Justicialista. La Alianza, the opposition coalition of center-left parties, has successfully contested governing party control of Argentina's Congress and won the mayoralty of Buenos Aires. La Alianza has confronted Menem's pardoning of war criminals. In late March, the Congress's lower house voted to repeal the amnesty laws passed during the 1980s. But while they have been able to confront the pardons of the military criminals, Las Madres say no similar challenge has been mounted to Menem's lopsided neoliberal agenda.
No votamos porque hasta ahora los partidos políticos que se han presentado.
Las Madres don't vote because, till now, the political parties that have presented themselves are not responding to the demands of the people. No one has suggested a change in the economic plan. The parties, at least the ones in power, continue with the ideas of globalization, of the labor flexibilization that has a lot to do with the unemployment, hunger, misery, and marginalization.
Flexibilización laboral que tiene que ver con el desempleo, el hambre, la miseria, la marginalidad.
As the economic situation in Argentina worsens, human rights are also being threatened. Human rights groups have reported a rise in the number of documented cases of police brutality, including several highly publicized killings, shootings, beatings, and rapes in the past year. Journalists investigating police corruption or the atrocities of the dirty war period have been special targets. Periodistas, an Argentine press association, says that since Menem has been in office, there have been 880 incidents of attacks or threats against reporters. One of the most notorious cases is the execution-style shooting of photojournalist Juan Luis Cabezas in January of 1997. Cabezas was investigating corruption in the Buenos Aires Police Department. Meanwhile, last November, the United Nations criticized Argentina for tolerating the continued practice of torture in police stations and prisons. Ebe de Bonafini describes the continuing human rights violations in post-dictatorship Argentina.
Las violaciones siguen permanentemente porque la policía es la que junto con los
The violations happen continually because the police, together with the governing officials and the president, preside over the game of drugs and prostitution. And this makes for a police force with a lot of power. Above all, it's based on repression. Repression against workers, repression against the unemployed, repression against the youth, repression in the barrios. Only a few days before I left, near where I live, there is a very marginalized barrio where the people are very poor, and because the youth and the people refuse to pay the police a kickback that they demanded for allowing the sale of marijuana and alcohol, the police entered the barrio with more than 50 police cars, rubber bullets, tear gas, and took any number of people who were arrested, beaten, hospitalized, and imprisoned. In the police stations, torture by electric prod, suffocation with plastic bags, and torture racks still exist. Not too long ago, they murdered a young man, someone who apparently saw something that he wasn't supposed to see, and they killed him in a police station in the north.
During the dictatorship, the first groups targeted and disappeared were university students and young people, who were accused of having links with the armed urban guerrilla movement of the Montoneros. Suspected insurgents also included trade unionists, human rights activists, journalists, and even a handful of the mothers of Las Madres. But today the nature of the repression has changed. Ebe de Bonafini explains.
Las víctimas son siempre jóvenes, jóvenes desocupados.
The victims are always young people, unemployed youth, extremely marginalized youth. The victims many times are also students who are persecuted during political marches. Sometimes the victims are kids that listen to rock. Always the youth, and in general, always the marginalized.
Throughout the hemisphere, the need to contain the threat, as defined by one of Argentina's past dictators, of communist anti-Western anti-Christian forces, has been replaced by the war on drugs and the crackdown on crime. Combating drug traffickers, criminals, even petty thievery has become the accepted reason for enlarging and modernizing police forces from New York City to Buenos Aires. And Clinton's recent naming of Argentina as a special non-NATO ally means that Argentina, like Egypt and Israel, now has access to surplus U.S. military equipment. Ebe sees a link between the dirty war that took her sons and the violence that is claiming new lives under Argentina's current democracy.
Y es por las mismas razones. Porque a nuestros hijos los hicieron desaparecer y los torturaron.
It's for the same reasons. That's why they disappeared our children, tortured them, shot them, assassinated them, because they opposed an economic program. And today, too, to apply this economic plan, they need to impose terror. That's the reason for the crackdown on criminality. In this way, they assassinate 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids who try to rob a car, or 15-year-old kids. and also those who oppose the program, the unemployed, the retired, or kids who don't have a life plan. They are accused so they can be assassinated, like in all other countries. It was that way with the two dictatorships and later with the other governments. And now they accuse them of being narco-traffickers, or if not, then criminals. And this is the way they fill the jails, with poor people and blacks, because we have hardly any rights to anything.
Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo are continuing their daily fight for justice. Recently, they've begun a campaign to expose convicted but freed military officers to their neighbors. By plastering the homes of these dirty war perpetrators with the names of their victims and the details of their murders, Las Madres say they show that while the state has pardoned them, society has condemned them. Details continue to emerge from survivors of the secret torture centers and from the abusers themselves of the brutality and banality of the clandestine war that claimed 1/9 of Argentina's population. Although Clinton and Menem would like to paint a radiant portrait of Argentina's healthy and prosperous democracy over the rotting canvas of its past, Ebe feels Las Madres' fight for justice is far from over.
Que las vidas de nuestros hijos en Naciones Unidas y en la OEA se convirtieron en dinero o en petróleo.
That in the United Nations or the Organization of American States our children's lives become currency or oil or other very sad commercial transactions, and that we want to reaffirm the value of life, that we wish to show to the world that life is the only thing that has worth, that we cannot accept any price for it, that we cannot permit men and women to continue being exploited, marginalized, that everyone's life, everyone's, young, old, black, white, yellow, has the same worth, and that it's not possible that only certain lives have worth. We have imposed this task on ourselves, which I know is very difficult, to confront, to fight, to denounce, to not be silent in spite of it all and in the face of it all. And if they kill us for what we're doing, then they kill us. But what we have done is to continue vindicating life over death. Life is the only thing. The only thing that has worth is life. We have to value it and defend it. And we have to fight hard, side by side, with the peoples of Latin America who are being subjugated.
Y que tenemos que luchar mucho junto a los pueblos que están en Latinoamérica tan sometidos.
Ebe de Bonafini is the founder and the president of Las Madres de Plaza de Mayo. For Our Americas, I'm Laura Tarantini.
The struggle of the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo and the horrors of the Argentine Dirty War is the subject of a new book published by Oxford University Press. A Lexicon of Terror, Argentina and the Legacies of Torture, explores the way language was used by the Argentine generals during the dictatorship in order to mask the harsh realities of the Dirty War. Literary translator, essayist, and author Marguerite Feitlowitz wrote the book Lexicon of Terror. In our last segment, we present a brief excerpt of my conversation with Marguerite Feitlowitz, who was in New York recently. I first asked her what inspired her to write A Lexicon of Terror.
My background is completely literary, and it was as a literary writer and a literary translator that I first made a connection with Latin American literature and Latin American writers, in particular Grisel Legambaro, Argentine playwright, one of the most important playwrights in Latin America of the century. And I was translating her work. Griselda was forced into exile in 1977 when one of her books was banned by Videla, the head of the dictatorship. As you probably know, dictators rarely take it upon themselves to personally ban books. They usually leave that to City Hall. In Griselda's case, it was Videla himself who said, "This book, this woman has to go." I began translating her work in 1985, ironically enough, or maybe not, during the trial of the ex-commanders. We'd been put in touch through mutual friends in Paris, and the play I began translating was called Información para Extranjeros, or Information for Foreigners, a play she smuggled out with her when she left, a play which was written in 1970-71, which foretold the coming era of state terrorism. And I became obsessed with the whole issue of the nefarious languages, the nefarious uses to which language could be put, and I wanted to get to the reality behind Griselda's plays.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was enabled to spend a year in Argentina with a Fulbright grant just talking to people.
Mm-hmm. I think the approach in Lexicon of Terror is very interesting because you focus on the language, but maybe before we get into some of that, for our listeners, we can get into the background of this period, this very dark
Absolutely.
History in Argentina, because again, we just marked the 22nd anniversary of the coup, and for some reason people seem to have forgotten already, not only here but even in Argentina to some extent. Maybe you can give us a brief overview as to that period during the Dirty War.
Okay, as you know, the Dirty War itself actually began before the dictatorship, which officially came to power on March 24, 1976. In 1975, during the presidency of Isabel Perón, there was an organization called the AAA, or the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliances, that took it upon itself to, as it said, eradicate subversion. By the time of the coup, there was no armed threat from the organized left. That's very important to bear in mind.
Because that's always been the excuse. That was the excuse that they used the entire period.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. By the end of 1975, the armed left, which comprised three major groups, Montoneros, People's Revolutionary Army, People's Revolutionary Armed Forces, they had very similar names, had been decimated. At the height of the armed guerrilla movement, which is 1974, 1975, there were about 2,000 people in all of these movements, of whom 400 had access to arms. And I had that number confirmed for me by the man who was in charge of the arms cache for Montoneros. So the pretext was to eliminate what they called subversion. They said communists were the antichrist. Over the whole decade of the 1970s, the armed left was responsible for 697 assassinations, mostly against police and military, who were the men who staffed the notorious AAA. And 54 civilians, industrialists, who were very much connected to the military and police infrastructure.
Now, this was during the 70s, but the result was thousands of deaths and disappearances of civilians, of other sectors, popular sectors, labor. Maybe you can talk
Absolutely.
A little bit about
that. As you were saying before, this was the pretext for what came to be known as the gentleman's coup. The way they defined subversion was according to the traditional categories of guilt: labor union organizers, labor union members, lawyers who took on human rights cases, who took on public welfare cases, psychiatrists, intellectuals, journalists, writers, artists, students, professors. The usual cast of characters.